feel about retailers, banks, maybe even stadiums knowing exactly what your face looks like? Well, this week on Download This Show, facial recognition is the next frontier for logging into things and a lot more than just your iPhone. So what are the services that are likely to use it and, well, exactly where are the security concerns with all this? Plus, how should Twitter tackle the likes of conspiracy theorist Alex Jones and his service InfoWars? And is it all over for Snapchat? All that much more coming up. This is your guide to the week in media, technology and culture. My name is Mark Fennell and welcome to Download This Show. Yes, indeed, it is Download This Show, and it is a very big welcome to our panellist who joins us via Skype from the United States of America. She's very, very obliging to do so from News Corp. Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, welcome back to Download This Show.
Why, thank you. It's almost good to be there.
I love that you're talking to us on a phone because you're in the United States at the moment on a secret phone project. I feel free to give away as much or as little as you need to on this.
I believe that Samsung may be unpacking something in the early hours of the morning, and I will be there to see them unpack it.
So long as they pack it back up again, said person that has toddlers. joining us in our Sydney studio is a man with hair that defies gravity and amazing glasses.
I love Wicked.
It is Benjamin Grubb. Benjamin, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back again.
There's lots to get through today. Don't forget, you can tweet along with the show. As always, the hashtag is Download This Show. I know it's too long for a hashtag, but let's commit to it anyway as a group. First up today, is the end nigh for Snapchat? There's been a lot of rumblings about the future of Snapchat. Why is that, Benjamin?
Because they are losing active users. I guess everyone's migrating to Instagram, the lure of Instagram stories and the filters that Instagram had, many of which Snapchat and Instagram, there's been a lot of copying going on. And yeah. I just think that
we can say the word stolen, right?
No one's gonna sell us. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's what's been going on. Back in the day, I think that there was like a $2 or $3 billion offer from Facebook to buy Snapchat. And that was reported in the Wall Street Journal probably in 2012 or 13 or something. It doesn't feel like it was that long ago. They rejected that offer. And so what did Facebook do? They bought Instagram, and then, you know, that allowed them to really ramp up the user base and do what they wanted to do if they had acquired
Just
Snapchat.
Just gouge that functionality. Hey, Jen, was it a mistake for Snap not to allow themselves to be bought by Facebook back in the day?
It's hard to say. Like back in the day, things were very embryonic. It looked like they were growing immensely. Like they put on something like 21 million active users in a month, which was insane. And back then, it looked like they could be another Facebook. And in the face of that, maybe you don't want to sell to Facebook and just be gobbled up by the machine. I don't think we'd really seen Facebook steal as much IP as they have now at that point too, because, I mean, Instagram's just got some amazing rip-offs of this stuff and it's working for them.
In terms of how dire the situation is for Snap at the moment, is it as bad as some people have been saying? Like there are literally articles about, you know, the end of Snapchat. Is it that bad, Jen?
I mean, it doesn't seem good when you've got like Facebook having an absolutely dire time and still maintaining their numbers, and you've got Snapchat's numbers falling off. I mean, that doesn't seem like a healthy way to be. And honestly, I think it's Kylie Jenner's fault because apparently her tweet back in February managed to wipe more than $1 billion off the value of the company, because she just said, does anybody actually go to Snapchat anymore? And apparently people don't. And part of that was because of a redesign they had, and that was very unpopular and apparently remains very unpopular. But maybe people just got used to not using it because Kylie said so.
It's true. Like, it lost something like 3 million daily users at the end of June. And that was the first time they actually went backwards in their user growth. When things are going backwards and you're a tech company, you learn to fail fast and like, oh, we've got to change something. They actually attributed
pivot.
They attributed that drop to the failed redesign, which they've almost walked back entirely on. I don't really use Snapchat much anymore these days. I think Snapchat, when it is used, is a very direct, it's like direct messages. It's the platform where it's, and that's where they maybe need to redefine themselves as like the new kind of text message kind of service, the new WhatsApp, but photos or something.
Sure. But Instagram, as if that all the other messaging services available to you don't already do those things.
It's got that ephemeral kind of vibe to it. And with, I guess, Instagram is like your perfect self. Twitter is like, you know, garbage fire, trash.
Mm.
And then Snapchat is like, I don't know.
Yeah. The fact that you can't instantly answer that, I reckon, is part of the problem though, yeah. Right? Because it doesn't, its role within that ecosystem, like each one of those services has a use. You fold it into your life in a different way.
Mm.
And the fact that you can't instantly answer that, I would argue is a problem. But I guess other people, I'm curious about the line between how much of the fate of Snapchat is because Facebook/Instagram have taken so much of that functionality, and how much is because it itself made changes that were unpopular, Jen. If you were to assign, I guess, percentages to either of those columns, where would you sit?
I think what sparked it was probably the redesign, and that sort of encouraged people to have a look at what they were doing and have a look at the purpose for that. But then after the redesign, when people had sort of been given a reason to tune off Snapchat, I think that Instagram stories just became a really easy to default because, as you say, like Instagram has a purpose, like you were already there because you were sharing a photo. So to share a story makes extra sense. You're sort of eliminating one stop in your day. And also, from what I hear, I'm not necessarily down with the kids, as in primary school kids. They play a lot of Fortnite. But I understand that they're using Instagram a lot and Instagram messaging a lot. So I think that, I mean, if they're there, who's on Snapchat?
Exactly. I mean, I've noticed that I don't have Tinder anymore on my phone, the dating app. And Instagram, at least in my community, has kind of turned into this new kind of dating thing. A lot of sliding into DMs going on the Instagram.
Oh, right. So you see a hot picture and then you hop into the...
Well, you could say... You said that.
What do I know? I've been in relationships since I was 19. Look, I guess in defense of Snap, the company, so as distinct from Snapchat, the product, their earnings are up slightly, and they've been quite bullish about working with brands, particularly broadcast brands, your MTVs and CNNs and stuff like that. Out of the content that's come out of that, and I know we're not huge Snapchat consumers here, right? So I'll put this one to the keeper. Of the different things that they've done with brands, has anybody seen anything they're like, actually, that's a really good idea. That's a format, a form of content that works quite well. Does anything, Jen, stand out to you?
I mean, I like the idea that they were sort of introducing custom filters. So if you went to a particular event, like a music festival or something, that you could have one of these custom filters to kind of prove you were there and share that around. I mean, that was quite interesting. And the fact that you could also do that, you know, for individuals as well. So, you know, you could set up a geofence around your wedding, for example, and everybody could take photos with that filter. Like, that was an interesting kind of addition that Instagram hasn't stolen yet. But as for brands, I don't know, because it seems like the redesign was trying to separate brands from friends a little bit, and maybe, I mean, that's part of the problem, that Snapchat doesn't quite understand what it is.
Mm. Is there anything, Ben, that Snap could do, any function they could bring in that would make you sign up immediately or go back and reactivate that account, as it were?
It's quite hard to think about that, because, I mean, I think they've lost everyone that they could have now, and it's not a loss of trust. It's kind of this loss gauge the interest. There's no more interest. Why do you want to have two things that do the same thing when one does it better?
Yeah,
you would rather drive the Ferrari than the, you know, the Commodore 64, whatever that
is. Mate, nothing wrong with Commodore 64s, although it is a weird comparison between a car and a computer.
But, you know, a Commodore. I don't think that there is. I was just going to add on the content side that I have looked at Snapchat because obviously research purposes for this show, and there are some interesting branded stuff. There's interesting branded stuff going on there, and they are making content, or at least brands or news publishers are making content to fit that format.
Yeah.
You know, and they like condensing down like information to, you know, the size of 8 or 7 seconds or whatever it is these days, and making like little clips and putting it together, and they're shooting it in in portrait mode, and it is kind of cool, but it does feel like, it feels like junk food news. Like it feels like I'm not actually, you know, it's entertainment. It is a place you go for entertainment. And I have a whole lot of views about, you know, the internet and how it might be bad for us in some cases. But I think that, yes, it's kind of a place where you could go for entertainment, and it might be doing it a little bit better than Instagram on that, but I think they've lost a lot of their users.
Download This Show is what you are listening to. It is your guide to the week in media, technology and culture. You are listening to the voices of me, Mark Fennell, alongside Ben Grubb, who is a technology reporter whose work you can read in a number of places, including the Fairfax Press, while it remains the Fairfax Press. And we've also got Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, who is a technology reporter. Are you a technology reporter or editor these days? I have trouble keeping track
editor.
Of it. Editor.
Give she's me an upgrade.
She's the editor for all things technology at News Corporation. Now, how to deal with the likes of Alex Jones and InfoWars, the far-right conspiracy theorist spouting broadcaster. There's been different approaches to curtailing his reach by different technology companies. Facebook, I think, have pulled him off. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ben. Facebook have pulled him off.
Yeah.
YouTube have pulled him off. Apple have pulled him off. Twitter
has not.
Has not. Right. So what is the right way to deal with something like that, particularly when so much of these technology companies have these ideals of free speech, which are very American concepts, embedded within their DNA? So walk me through what it was that Twitter put up as, I guess, a rationale for not getting rid of Alex Jones in the first place, Ben.
Well, Jack, the CEO, kind of came out, as he has on a number of occasions. I think the same thing happened with Donald Trump. People were trying to get rid of him from Twitter.
Yeah.
But he came out a couple of days ago. He basically said the same. It was along the same lines as what he's said with Donald Trump. I don't have the exact words in front of me.
Well, the defense with Donald Trump, I think, was the fact that he's the president and everything he says is now a matter of public interest, and that's a defense.
Yeah.
But his defense of Alex Jones was simply that he hadn't broken any terms of service, which I don't know.
He says, we didn't suspend Alex Jones or InfoWars yesterday. We know that's hard for many, but the reason is simple. He hasn't violated our rules. We'll enforce if he does, and we'll continue to promote a healthy conversational environment by ensuring tweets aren't artificially amplified. So it sounds like they're going to go for the silencing tactic, which is what Facebook was doing for a long while, where they would just, yes, they can post their content, but we're just going to tweak down the dial as to how many people that content will reach. So we're still going to allow free speech, but we're going to silence them at the same time, quietly.
Yeah. What about you, Jen? What do you think is the right way to deal with a character like Alex Jones and a character like and an organization like InfoWars? How do you make those two things balance, this notion of free speech versus a guy that, is out there accusing victims of the Sandy Hook massacre of being actors and things like that? How do you deal with that?
I think that, calling him a character is quite polite.
Yeah.
I think when you're actively sort of encouraging people to victimize victims of crime, I think maybe that's overstepped the line. And I don't see, if that doesn't overstep your terms of service, maybe you need to change your terms of service, which is what Jack was suggesting today. Maybe we need these to evolve with time. And I think he's taken on board a lot of replies that he's gotten over the past day about this. Honestly, though, I can't see how companies like social networks like Facebook, for example, are saying, fake news is not our friend, and at the same time allowing this sort of guff on their network, because it's clearly poisonous. It's clearly untrue. They're not making any efforts to fact check. It's pure conspiracy theory with absolutely no regard for actual truth behind it all. I know that these social networks didn't set out to be the arbiters of this sort of stuff and decide, what people should see and what people shouldn't see. But they've accepted the billions of dollars for actually hosting this information. Maybe that's just the role that they've got to find themselves in. And in this case, I don't even think it's a line ball call.
In that sense, then, what would your rationale be? Let's say you're in charge of, in this instance, Twitter, and you decide to pull
awesome.
Him off. Yeah. Can you fix it, please? So then you're in this position, you've pulled him off. What would be your core reasons for doing so then? Because I think we all agree that the guy's reprehensible. There's no question about, I think, at that. But what would be a justifiable and a rule that you could consistently apply to other users for pulling him off?
You need to stop saying pulling him off because it's really distracting.
Understood, I will.
But honestly, he's actively spreading incorrect information, and he's doing that to sort of achieve his own goals. I honestly think that after a certain point, you can very clearly see a pattern. He's kind of made a whole career out of this. It's very easy to sort of break a term. If one of your terms of service is simply don't consistently spread fake information, then perhaps that's a really easy one to control. It just doesn't seem that incredibly difficult to me, especially when you're talking about the effect that he has on victims.
Yeah. As we look around at how different social media networks are tackling this issue, there's lots of different ways in which they've been approaching it. For example, Facebook have been moving to give a slight bump to what they call trusted publishers and local publishers. And there's also been some ways of sort of addressing context around articles that come up on Facebook that may come from dodgy sources. And they've been experimenting with all these things. And a lot of it is machine learning. Like, they're relying an enormous amount on machine learning. Are there ways, Ben, you've seen people, social networks, pre-existing social networks, deal with these issues of fake news and people saying ridiculous, insane things that you think has actually been quite effective? Because it's a huge problem that sort of is a struggle to deal with at scale.
I mean, look at China. They're very good at clamping down on looking like that. What do they have, like, one person and then how many people in government to look at that one person? You're never going to be able to cover the entire population without having one for one. So you have to divide the population by half and then have one person looking at everything that's being said about, like, otherwise, yes, you're always going to have a computer algorithm or machine learning or artificial intelligence looking at it. And what are those biases that go into those? They're human biases. And so it always requires a human at some point to have some form of almost perfection, but never entire perfection. And what are some of the good ways that I've seen? I don't know, Facebook, to its credit, has hired thousands upon thousands of people to look at content in the wake of the Russia stuff, in the wake of the fake news stuff. It is incredible how many people they have hired just to go through this content internally too. Mm. To go through, you know, the worst of the worst on the internet and the fake and everything in between. And that's really the only way. If they're going to say that, yes, we accept that, you know, we are the arbiters, we are responsible, we are a publisher, then that's the only way that they do it. Otherwise, it has to go back to if the internet is free. And, yeah, I've been struggling with this question. I don't know what the right answer is, and it's going to be one that evolves over time and what society expects. And I think that the current expectation is that because people have started to see that it can affect the outcome of elections, it can undermine democracy, that we still place some sort of value in protecting democracy. And the way that we protect it is to ensure that people are held accountable.
Download This Show is what you are listening to. Ben Crubb, technology journalist, joins us in studio, and Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, technology editor for News Corp, whose arm stamina for holding up her phone is next level. How is your arm going? Have you swapped arms at all?
I have a few times, yeah, but I figure this is a workout, so it's all good.
Oh, good. Okay, so that's a good way of thinking about it. If you're one of those people that constantly forgets your password, the next bit of information might be really helpful. Increasingly, your face is serving as your password. Tokyo's 2020 Olympic Games, they're going to use facial recognition for all accredited individuals. There's a Chinese e-commerce giant named JD.com that has an unmanned store technology that uses facial recognition to charge customers. This stuff isn't going to go back anytime soon. It's going to be an increasing part of how you log into things and how you pay for things. And I guess the question that remains off the back of that is, what should you be concerned about? So when it comes to facial recognition technology, how important do you think it's going to be to the way we navigate through life, Jen, in the next kind of 5 to 10 years?
It's potentially scary how many things could use this. And like you mentioned, you know, if you forget your password, you know, this could be really handy. But the problem is, I can change my password, but it's really expensive to change your face. And so if I say, for instance, that a supermarket decides to add this and I decide that, you know, Flybys, for example, isn't for me, are they still going to be able to register my face as I walk around the store, even though I don't really want them to, because I'm offended by their tiny little shop toys going around the place? Like, I wonder how much sort of information is associated with your face that you're not going to be able to kind of divorce yourself from.
Ben, the notion that a bunch of corporations have ready access to my face, I'm not going to lie. Like, even though I can absolutely appreciate the convenience of it, I see people with their iPhones looking in with their facial recognition technology, which I know lots of people do. I recognise its value in that sense, but by the same token, losing that control over your face and your identity as you walk into a store kind of fills me with the creeps.
Yeah, there's been a lot of smart people recently, academics, who have come out and actually said we need to ban facial recognition technology. We need to have laws that actually ban it because...
Or at the very least, make it opt-in, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So, look, it's always going to be a trade-off between security / privacy and convenience. And... yeah, I mean, I do use facial recognition or, you know, facial for on the password side for some things. But as Jen points out rightly, you know, once you lose your face, if you're a public figure or even if you're not a public figure these days, if there is a targeted attack against you or a device that you own, there are ways for people to obtain that photo of you. I've kind of judged in certain circumstances where I'm willing to have that trade-off. Mm. But on facial recognition more broadly, yeah, I have great concerns about it. You know, we're already seeing in China, they've basically got their really dumb cameras, their CCTV cameras, whacked on some facial recognition and turned it into this, like, spying apparatus for the government. And you don't really need that higher quality vision these days. You can do what was possible in CSI and all those TV shows based on really grainy footage. It's really scary what's about to happen. There is in Australia right now some academics looking at facial recognition in particular, and they are starting to show what are some of the flaws in it. Mm-hmm. And one of those academics recently pointed out that you can start to determine things like, does this person look like they are potentially a sociopath or a psychopath or aggressive or irresponsible? Apparently I'm all three. When I read myself,
which is why we took all the weapons off you when we let you into the building.
But yeah, there's some, and it's all based on, again, human input. And that was the point, that these algorithms are based on models of, like, say, 10,000 faces. We don't have enough data yet. And when the model is poor, it means that people from minorities, people of color, they start to get pulled aside if law enforcement are using this because the algorithm's working against them. And I think the world would be worse off if we started using technology for purposes like that. And already we see in Australia, we are going to have a facial database of everyone's driver's license. We may have all forgotten that that was going to happen, but
as it currently stands in America, I think something in the vicinity of half of all American adults are in police facial recognition databases. That's from a 2016 study. I mean, part of me was actually kind of surprised by how high that was. Jen, does that stat surprise you?
Absolutely. What are these people doing exactly that they're all in a facial recognition database? Like, that's a lot of DUIs, I imagine.
Well, when you come into the country, they take a photo of you in LA.
I actually found this interesting because when I came into the country this time, they didn't take my fingerprints, which I was initially really excited about, but they did still take my photo.
Does that mean they've already got your fingerprint on file, though? Because you travel to the States quite a few
times. But they actually weren't taking fingerprints from anybody. So I wonder if their facial recognition is just so good or they just didn't trust people a lot, which doesn't seem likely. So maybe their facial recognition has just gotten so good that they don't need fingerprints.
Yeah, I was talking to one company and they said that they could get something like 93% accuracy or something now with the crappiest photo ever. So, yeah.
Okay, so that raises some questions. For you as a person, where is the line for you where you would be comfortable with facial recognition technology being used? So, obviously, entering and exiting a country, that goose is cooked. You know, it's happening. But what about marketers? What about walking into stores and them collecting that information and using it to service you specific ads? Is that something that you as a consumer would like or would have rankles with?
Hell no. No. Make it difficult. Like, at least, you know, make your marketing less creepy. I'm okay with it on things like, you know, the iPhone 10 and on Samsung's phones where, you know, they look at the shape of your face because that's stored locally on the device. I don't want I don't want the supermarket chains to have my face on their records somewhere and have all of the ridiculous things that my son puts in the trolley associated with my name.
I just can imagine a future. Can you just imagine a future where you're like, you're on the toilet, you're using your phone, and then your phone's like Clippy from Microsoft. Gosh. It's like, hey, we just saw you. You just did a poop. Would you like me to buy some new toilet paper for you? It's not a future I want to live in.
I'll say this for this show. At the end of every episode, we come up with at least three really good new Black Mirror episodes. Can I just say before we go, where is your line, Ben? Because there is convenience attached to this, no question. Where is the line for you in terms of what you would use?
Well, I think people are sick of entering their password 160 times a day on their phone, because that's about the rough, you know, average that we would check our phones daily. And when we went to that fingerprint thing, people were kind of okay with that.
I still love the fingerprint thing.
And I prefer the fingerprint thing. And then the Apple took the fingerprint thing away. But Samsung still has it, at least until maybe tomorrow when they unveil something new, maybe. I think biometrics are always going to be tricky. I think there'll be like a breach of a biometric database, and that's what it will take before people realize that, you know, maybe it's a bad idea to go down the route of biometrics. I think that it will be probably the line for me is using biometrics as a form of authentication. I don't want to be spied on. I don't want to be like walk outside my house and like, you know, X number of government agencies know where I am. I don't want to walk into my company where I work and have them go, oh, we saw you arrived. It's based on just my face. Like, I don't have to put a lanyard pass on a security thing. They just know that I'm there. Ben left at this time. Ben left at that time. That's not a world I want to live in.
Out of curiosity, you said earlier that you did the, there's a new piece of technology doing the rounds where they could make inferences about your personality based on your face. What were the inputs? What were they looking at to kind of conclude that you were the sociopath, which, I mean, Jen and I obviously know you to be.
So the inputs were a model of about 10,000 faces that's available on the internet for many researchers to download. The sample size is clearly not large enough because some of the outputs or the things that it decides are my characteristics or traits were not necessarily accurate.
A sociopath would say that, though.
Mark. And that was the point. So there's not enough people of colour in there. And if you were a person of colour and you stood in front of it, it might say that you are a criminal.
Because it's concluded that people of colour are overrepresented in criminal statistics.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So the inputs, and what they did was they looked at all the 10,000 faces, they got a whole bunch of people to look at those 10,000 faces and then make a judgment on each of those individual characteristics. Does he look aggressive in this photo? Does he not look aggressive? Responsible? And so on. And then, so that was human input into about 10,000 faces, and a few other people kind of come along and look at that, and then it makes a judgment based on a single frame. And obviously, like what I did to make the system kind of point out the flaws was I took my glasses off and I was suddenly 24, and then I put them back on and I was 28, which proves the Hollywood theory, you know, that if you wear glasses, you do look older.
It's what they do with the, you know, you take a model and then you put glasses on them and then they're a nuclear scientist by Michael Bay logic. Yes. All right. Thank you both of you so much for doing the show. Ben, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you very much.
And Jennifer Dudley Nicholson from News Corp. Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much we appreciate having you hold your arm up for so long. It's really appreciated.
I feel much stronger now. It's all good.
You are welcome. On behalf of the National Broadcaster, you are welcome. Hey, if you enjoyed the show, do leave a review on whichever podcasting app you happen to listen to us on. The more reviews you put in, the more it helps people find the show. It actually does make a huge difference. And with that, I will leave you. My name's Mark Fennell, and thank you for listening to another episode of Download This Show.